How's it? How are you doing? Well, I hope you've had an amazing sporting week like us. We certainly have, yep. It's that time of the week again. It's time for another installment of your weekly sports podcast, Talking Point, the forum, of course, where we engage and debate with our top citizen sports journalists, keep you in the loop every day on our print and online portals. And from time to time, of course, we also line up some special guests, so listen out for those. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cromer. Joining me in studio this week, always fantastic, a contributor to the show and an expert panelist, also omnipresent on all our various media platforms, both in print and online. He sat on the reserve bench in a team rotation last week, if we can put it that way. The head of Citizen Sport, welcome back, Jacques van der Westhuizen. Great to have you on board.
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks, Trevor.
And another all-rounder. He's dabbled in virtually every sport in his career, an athletics and Olympic sports specialist. But we can tap into his knowledge on a range of other sporting codes at the best of times. He'll be wearing his athletics cap this week, and time permitting, maybe even a little bit of cricket. Welcome back, senior citizen sports writer Wesley Botten. He's on our Talking Point hotline today. But let's kick off straight away with rugby. We're literally on the final countdown to the 2023 World Cup in France. We'll be heading into single digits next week before the kickoff on 8 September. When the hosts France face New Zealand. Our Springboks underway on 10 September. That's against Scotland. But before that, there's this week's order of business to take care of. The Box facing the All Blacks in a warm-up at Twickenham. Passing the ball across straight to Jacques, a massive 52-16 victory over Wales in Cardiff last time out for the Box. Admittedly a weakened Wales side, so not even sure if Warren Gatland was having too many sleepless nights about that one. So Jacques, how much can we really read into that result?
Yeah, it was an important game, I think, for the Box, Trevor. You know, they need to, you know, play as often and as much as possible at this stage. And Ninaba was, you know, trying to get some of those World Cup combinations sorted out now, you know, having this first match after the squad announcement. So, you know, he's trimmed it down, and this is the group that's going to be going to France for the World Cup. So he needed to see what his best, you know, 23 could look like and how they would go. They played, obviously, they played some good rugby. They played against a weakened team in Wales, but it was a good performance overall. I think he would have got a lot out of that. I think a lot of the biggest ticks for me were the return of Sia Kolisi and two of those other players, Jaden Hendricks and Oxenche, who hadn't played for some time. So those were the big ticks for me. But a good performance. I don't think we need to read too much into it because, as you said, a very much weakened Wales team, but a good hit out at the end of the day.
We both engaged in lengthy discussions about this. You've already mentioned it, the return of box skipper Sia Kolisi following a lengthy layoff and some other players who were doubtful due to injury. Sia due to a knee injury, his influence on the team. No alarm bells, thank heavens, phasing him back gradually into an 80-minute game, perhaps. Jacques, his performance overall and in some heavy contact situations, pretty impressive.
Absolutely. I mean, I was hugely impressed by that performance, considering he hadn't played for months since April, possibly just a few hit-outs on the training field. I thought he was superb in everything that he did. He really looked classy for those 40 minutes that he was on the field. And as you say, this weekend he gets another chance to go, hopefully maybe 50, 60 minutes. And then by the time they get to France, he will be up to speed. But yeah, I was very pleased to see him playing there. I think, you know, we sometimes forget and don't realize how influential Sia is on that team. And his quality of play is really right up there. At his best, he doesn't have a competitor in this country. We've seen guys like Marco van Staden play this year. We've seen Quagga Smith play in the number 6 jersey. Here and there, they produce good performances, but for consistency and for sheer passion and determination and real grunt and getting into those wider channels, he really is in a class of his own. So that was the big tick for me, as I said.
Looking at this week, we've all been debating the merits of those so-called warm-up games. But a test is a test, and the All Blacks are our greatest rivals and foes. Also, potential quarter-final World Cup opponents if we don't top our group. That's also a possibility. But broadly speaking, how important do you feel the All Blacks' result actually will be? Every player and coach interviewed pretty much this week, they love to use it. The word momentum just constantly crops up over and over and over.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, I don't think the end result is going to make all that much difference, whoever wins or loses. Even obviously, there's pride at stake, and you always want to win and play well against your, you know, your biggest rival in rugby. So you know, there's that element to it. But I think the most important thing, as you say, is, you know, the Springboks will want to build some more momentum from last week's performance against Wales. There are a couple new combinations playing this week. It gives an opportunity to a guy like Marnie Lubbock to work on his goal kicking again. It gives the Boks a chance to see Kanan Moody at 13, see Andre Esther raising at 12. So it's another chance to see how certain players go in a real pressure environment, you know, playing against your biggest foes. But at the same time, the pressure is almost off because there's nothing really riding on the game. So the players can play with some sort of freedom. They can go out there and express themselves, and I think that's key as well. You know, often when there's a big trophy on the line, or when it's in a competition or whatever, you know, players can maybe creep into their shells a little bit, and on this occasion, they can really just go out and express themselves. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it could be a very big open match with a lot of ball flying around and a lot of pace and tempo. And I think we're going to go the whole 80 minutes to get a winner.
Let's put it more in a nutshell and narrow it down again. Quickly looking at the makeup of the side to face the All Blacks. Kanan Moody, you mentioned, he's been switched to 13. That took us by a bit of a surprise. A test perhaps of his versatility for the duration of the World Cup. Or do you feel this may be a future role for him? What do you make of it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I think the coaches have spoken for some time now about Kanan having the size and the physique and the skills and that to play at 13. So it looks like it's been a move that's been on the cards for a while because, let's be honest, outside of Lukanya and Jesse Creel, who's really come to the fore of late and is a veteran, you know, of the Springbok squad, you know, if we look over around the country, who are the other 13s that are stepping forward? There isn't really anybody that, you know, jumps out at you. So, you know, for depth and for experience and looking ahead to the future, maybe 4 years from now, a guy like Jesse Creel might not be there. Lukanya you know, is still possibly going to be there. But, you know, you're going to need a backup. And maybe this is the future for Kanan Moody. We've got so many quality wings. So competition for those starting berths on the wing are going to be, you know, very tight. So perhaps his future does lie at 13. I'm looking forward to seeing him there. He's definitely shown that he's got the skills and the pace and the strength, and you know, he can read a game fairly, you know, very well as well. He showed last weekend against Wales that he can read those defensive situations, those intercept situations fairly well. So, yeah, it should be a good one for him. Obviously, it's a big test against a settled New Zealand combination and playing next to Andre Esterhazy, who he wouldn't know all that well, and both of those men will be looking to impress. So I think that combination, though, is an interesting one at this stage because they haven't played together, though.
You talk about the future with the young guns, if we can call them that. Another issue all over the media this week is the goal-kicking situation. You have alluded to it briefly. Marnie Lubbock is the incumbent fly-half. His play generally as a pivot has been pretty solid. Unfair criticism perhaps by the rugby public this week on social media outlets, but he hasn't been too great off the kicking tee, we have to admit. The Bok coaching staff don't seem too concerned at this stage with a Cheslin Colby, a Damian Willemser, and even a Faf de Klerk also around. Is it something Bok fans should really be worried about, Jacques?
I wouldn't be too worried about it right now. You know, I think Marnie Lubbock has brought so much additional X factor to that fly half position. And as Jacques Nienaber said in the week, you'd rather see him creating eight tries than you know, worrying about his goal kicking at this stage. And I agree. He's really brought something new to that back line, and they look fantastic. They look like every time they go on a run, they can potentially score a try. And a lot of that has got to do with Marnie Lubbock. So I've got no issues with him playing there. I am also, you know, I get irritated by social media with how quickly people can turn around and point fingers and criticize players. You know, we've really scored some good tries recently, and a lot of that has got to do with him. But obviously the goal kicking is an issue and it is a concern. He is the frontline goal kicker. He's a guy that should be slotting 80-90% of his kicks, and he's just not doing that right now. I think it can come right. I think it's something that he's obviously aware of, and he showed previously that he knows how to kick a goal. He did that for the Stormers for two seasons now, and they played in two finals, and he was the top point scorer in that competition in the URC. So he can kick a goal. I've got no issues with him, but it's something that he's going to have to show that he's worked on and he can turn it around quickly, and hopefully it does happen quickly. If it doesn't, I think then they have to look at a guy like Cheslin or Fuff or even Damien if he's going to be starting to take those kicks at goal. We might even see that this weekend already just as a tester because there's nothing on the line. So, I like Marnie Libbok at 10. I don't think he's going to be in jeopardy of losing his place because of the goal kicking. But, it's something that we need to keep an eye on.
To wrap up our rugby discussion, Jacques, less than 2 weeks to the big one in France. Do you feel all the boxes are pretty much ticked by now, or aside from the very few issues we've already alluded to in our discussion on this talking point, all appears to be in really good nick?
Yeah, I think the coaching team know more or less what their strongest team is. I really do think so. They're comfortable with that. They know, who the backup guys are. They know what the makeup of the bench will be, barring one or two positions here and there, depending on the opposition. But I think they're fairly settled and comfortable with where they are. It's now a matter of just honing those little finer details and getting that momentum going, getting confidence going, and then building towards that opening match. I think they've got all those boxes ticked. There are not too many issues at this stage. Let's hope that they get through this weekend with no further injuries, and then they can turn their focus completely to the World Cup.
Captivating period ahead for Springbok rugby, and fingers crossed, holding thumbs, plenty of the usual cliches, but I think it's going to be a great World Cup for the Springboks. Over to you, Wesley, and finally out of the starting blocks, thanks for your patience, shifting our focus across to the World Athletics Championships, currently on the go in Budapest, Hungary. Lots of live action, some key finals and heats still to come before they wrap it up on the weekend. But let's draw our attention to our top sprinter, Akani Simbini, at this particular juncture. A false start in the men's 100-meter semi-final, that pretty much of his own making, one would say. But as a major medal prospect, Wes, a huge, huge disappointment. Just talk us through that one. Also very confidence-shattering, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely. I think he took it in his stride. The way he addressed it afterwards, I thought was excellent, but very disappointing. I think going into the season, he would have probably thought that this could have been his year. He was looking really good the whole year. And I think one thing that really counted in his favor is that nobody was really standing out. Nobody went into the championship as the firm favorites in the 100. And this was probably at least one of his best chances to finally get that podium place, which he just can't seem to get. And he's been so consistent. I think he would have been competitive. He certainly would have been up there in the final. So, he'll get another chance at the Olympics next year. But, time is running out. He's going to have to, if he's ever going to get that major medal, it's going to have to come soon.
Another Mzansi hot prospect we spoke about a lot in the build-up to Bucharest, and we don't want to harp on disappointments here. It was shot putter Kyle Blichnout, a gold medalist at the Under-20 World Champs in 2018. Build-up was really looking good, a personal best to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics, various records behind his name, even at university level, and he fell out in the first round, Wes. What went wrong there, do you feel?
It's so strange. I don't know, because when you speak to Kyle Blichnout, he doesn't really point out any issues. So I don't know what the problem is. One of the biggest issues for anybody who's performed well in the shot put as a junior is transitioning to senior level, because the shot is quite a lot heavier. And the problem is that they have to change their technique, and it takes years to do that. But Kyle seemed to have got that in the bag within 2 or 3 years of his senior career, reached the Olympic final, and, was really looking like a potential, former or future Olympic champion, a potential world record holder, I think. And then just the last couple of years hasn't really been able to find that form again. So very disappointing. I don't know, if he's going to be able to come back. He's still very young for a shot putter. So, yeah, let's hope. Whatever's wrong, I hope that he comes right in the next couple of years.
Quite a bit of enthusiasm around Zanay van der Walt. She's chosen to take on the very tough 400 metre and 400 hurdles double. Quite a task. Is she biting off perhaps more than she can chew, West, you feel? Or to use a common cliche, how do you see her shaping?
She did. I think she probably knew that she was biting off more than she could chew, because earlier this year when she did run some 400 meter races, she said that she was just doing it to kind of sharpen up for the hurdles, which makes sense. She's always been a hurdler. But she did qualify in both, and then very surprisingly entered both. And it wasn't, you know, the schedule wasn't set up at all for anybody to do that double. She had to run four races in 3 days, just in the heats and the semis. It would have been even worse for her if she had got into the finals. And you could see that by her fourth race, she was completely flat. So, you know, it did take everything out of her. And she said that she was kind of experimenting, I suppose, maybe knowing that she wasn't a medal contender really in either event, just decided to see if she had it in her to maybe do this again down the line. But, you know, she has been, I think, criticized a bit for experimenting at a world championship, but I do get it. You know, if she's not going to be in line for a medal, and she would have probably struggled to get into either of the finals, if she got something out of doing that, she is a future star, I think. So, I think it's okay. Getting into two semis was a good all-round performance, and maybe it does show that down the line she has some sort of potential for that double.
Wes, we spoke at length 2 weeks ago about our medal prospects. You were brutally realistic with our expectations, and your reports have reflected that. But we didn't anticipate a generous medal haul from the beginning, but we agreed that building towards next year's Olympics was an important longer-term goal. The Olympics is very cyclic, and athletes come and go. Take us through a few of the younger members of Team South Africa showing some kind of potential, Wes. We're talking Olympics here.
Yeah, so, you know, we mentioned Zene van der Walt. I think one of her problems, you know, she's only 23. I think one of the problems she has is that her specialist event, the 400 hurdles, is incredibly tough at the moment. It really is. But, you know, she still does seem to be one of our potential stars of the future. But quite a few younger athletes doing pretty well. You know, Marianne Faree in the 100 hurdles, she reached the semifinals. She managed to run really well, especially in the heats. So great experience for her. She's only 21. And then, you know, some of our sprinters in the 200 meters, Sina Sipo Dambile and Sean Maswangani, both getting through the heats there. Just getting through the early rounds, I think, is a good sign for their futures as well. They're both under the age of 23. Prudence Sekodiso, she's 21. She got through the early rounds in the 800. And so, you know, all these athletes, I think, have shown that they're quick. You know, they've got potential. But to be able to progress, especially at an early age, through the heats and the semis at a major championship definitely bodes well for the future. So, yeah, like you said, we never really expected too much from these championships in terms of medals, but some of these athletes, I think, giving us an indication that we might be able to look for more down the line.
And finally, before we wrap it, Wes, just take guard momentarily. The Proteas, that's our cricket side, will welcome Australia for the first time since 2020 to our shores. Ahead of us, a white ball only tour, the money spinners as far as Cricket South Africa are concerned, of course. But that's a debate among cricket traditionalists for a completely another day. Three T20 internationals, five ODIs. Very quickly, Wes, it should be a great series, as always, emotion-churning cricket, almost an unseasonal tour. T20 cricket is exciting, sook and hook cricket, as some may like to call it. But the importance of the ODI series can't be highlighted enough. It's also a pre-World Cup series, and Coach Rob Walter certainly wants to tick as many boxes as possible.
Yeah, I think both could be great. You know, they've made a lot of changes to the T20 squad. A lot of guys have been given an opportunity, and, you know, some really explosive players. Divock Revis is in that squad. So it's going to be really good to see if any of them are able to step up. But, you know, a lot of the senior players missing from that T20 squad are going to be back in the side for the ODI series. Obviously, like you say, building up for that World Cup. But, you know, it's strange to say for an Australia tour, but because of
where it is placed in the season. And because it's only, you know, like a month out from the World Cup, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of experimentation, if they try some different things and just try and sharpen themselves up a little bit. Obviously, that World Cup is far more important than a tour against Australia. But no matter who plays, it's going to be two strong squads and probably, I imagine, two great series to watch.
More on the Proteas in future editions of Talking Point, so keep listening. Don't go anywhere, guys. It's that part of the show where we hail and hammer. We hail excellence, we hammer mediocrity. It's our weekly Flop and Gold Star of the Week feature. My flop of the week, and Wesley, you must be sharing my thoughts here. I'm pinning the badge firmly on the running vest of this week on Akani Simbini. An athlete as experienced as he is and a genuine medal prospect in the 100-meter sprint should know very well by now how to avoid multiple false starts, especially in an event as high profile as the World Athletics Championship. That's my little lot. And my gold star of the week, that goes to South Africa's Red Bull KTM MotoGP rider, Brad Binder. Another great ride in both the sprint and the main race at the Austrian MotoGP last weekend. A healthy points haul again, leaving him fourth in the overall MotoGP World Championship standings and certainly doing a great job for his team splitting the dominant Ducatis. Jacques.
Yeah, Trevor, I can't disagree with you. I think, as you said, I think Wesley might go the same route. Akane Simbini was hugely disappointing. I think we were all looking forward to him running in that final and hoping, you know, to get a gold or silver or bronze even. So that was hugely disappointing. You've said it all. And then my gold star this week actually goes to Jesse Creel. This is a player that's played over 50 tests for the Springboks, yet he continues to get criticism, you know, doesn't get too much backing from the fans. And he stepped up, you know, in the absence of Lukanya Arm, and he produced a great performance against Wales. In his other two performances this year, he also looked really good in that number 13 position. So I'm really pleased for him, and I'm pleased for the box. I think we're going to be just okay with Jesse Creel at 13. So well done to him for stepping it up.
Wes, aside from perhaps the obvious leaning towards Akani Simbini, how are you looking this week?
Yeah, I have to lean the same way. Like I said, I thought he was very gracious. It's not an easy thing to have to handle, bombing out like that. And he carried himself really well. But in a championship where we aren't expecting a lot of medals, you know, that was a huge disappointment for the South African athletics team. And then my gold star, I'm going to give to middle distance runner Tsepo Tsite. Chita used to be an 800-meter runner, and for the first time this season, focusing on the 1500, and missed out on a place in the World Championship final by 1/100th of a second. So he, I think, has a very bright future over the 1500-meter distance, and we'll see what he does at the Olympics next year.
And that's where we wrap it. You have yourself a great sporting week with the Citizen as your constant companion, both online and in print. Jacques van der Westhuizen, head of Citizen Sport, Wesley Botten, senior sports writer. Thank you as always for joining us. Always a treat to share your thoughts with us. My name is Trevor Kramer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za, or why not follow Citizen News on Iono FM. You'll also find the podcast on the Citizen YouTube account. Remember, as always, don't wait for the opportunity. Simply go out there and just create it. May all your days be sporting days. Till next time, have a good one. Cheers.